The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. At no time in that 120 minutes, nor in those penalties, did I have any doubt. Jordan Pickford's strong wrist, Eric Dier keeps his cool. Totally exhausting. In Bogota, they delayed flights for extra time. In England, they delayed Love Island. But it's done, and it still could actually come home. In the other game, a stultifying Switzerland were edged out by a slightly less stultifying Sweden, which means the last quarterfinals sees England play Sweden. We'll look ahead to the full quarterfinal draw, take your questions, and that's today's Guardian World Cup Football Daily. How are you, Barry?
I'm fine, thank you.
Happy?
Yeah.
Seemed happier when Colombia equalised.
Yeah, I was quite happy. I was guffawing with laughter, pounding my fist on the table and basking in your absolute unbridled misery.
Alex says, I really hope the opening to tonight's pod is just you screaming yes in Barry's face. We have a full panel today. Paolo Bandini, nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Santis from Mundial Magazine, nice to see you.
Hello, mate.
Would you say, Barry, of the three of us, how would you rate each of us as England fans watching that absolute torture?
Well, Paolo was just quite chirpy because I think he's more of an Italian fan than an England fan. I'm looking forward to hearing Sam's insights into the game because he spent most of the last 2 hours with his face in his palm and his hands on the table. So, you know, he will be able to give us some astonishing insights into the skin on the palm of his hands. And watching England play with you is one of the most unpleasant experiences I've ever had in my life.
Why would you say that?
And I imagine being a player on the football team you captain is even worse.
What's your
because
reason?
If you're anything like a captain, as you are a spectator, you kind of put on this English yobbo football accent for watching football. It's not your normal accent. And then you just spend 2 hours going, stay on your feet, stay on your feet, stay on your feet. It's more annoying than the England band.
The thing is, I'd love to come back with something, but I'm completely guilty as charged.
Yeah. It's like a lot of Irish people, when they're playing football or singing football chants, do it in an English accent. I've no idea why, but you do a similar thing. Even though you've an English accent, you sort of become a barrow boy. It's quite hilarious.
It's not intentional.
Well, it's weird.
It's not affected. Do you know what I mean? It's not an affected thing. It's guttural. It's inside me somewhere.
Well, if I'm watching football, I don't suddenly develop a Birmingham accent for no reason whatsoever. You know, yeah, come on. Come on, lads. It's interesting.
It's interesting. Paolo, I mean, you hate to use the cliches like England do this to you, but England do this to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably everyone in this studio, Baz included, thought that that game was over in 90 minutes. England were... The thing is that England sort of felt like they were well on top for a lot of that game, but as we were talking about, actually really didn't create any goal-scoring chances in those 90 minutes. I mean, the goal came from a penalty that was handed to them. Colombia, I thought, actually really defended very intelligently through a lot of the game. They started off in the 4-2-3-1, which was quite narrow the way they played it, and even as the formation evolved a bit through the game, they stayed relatively narrow and almost sort of dared England to try and go and win the game down the wings, which you'd think they'd be able to do with someone like Harry Kane in the box and with fullbacks certainly capable of getting on like that. But yeah, Yerry Mina is having, well, I was saying he's having, now has had a sensational tournament. Davinson Sanchez was excellent again tonight. Didn't have the ricket that you were expecting him to have at some point in every game.
No, he was excellent tonight, wasn't he?
But But actually, you know, England was sort of comfortable without having themselves created anything. Now, it seemed like the game was going to end because Colombia hadn't created anything either until out of nowhere, it was Uribe, wasn't it? Had that shot which Pickford makes a sensational save on, which is a sort of fleeting moment of salvation because the corner comes in and Mina, who exits this tournament as a centre-back, having played three, scored three, all with his head, one in each game. It wasn't. You can't say it was coming. It happened, and then extra time was a bit more different and interesting. But it seemed like England had it in 90 minutes. They didn't have it in 90 minutes. But yeah, this is evolution for England. This is an England team that can take a setback like that, survive it, and go and actually win a penalty shootout.
Sam, we'll sort of work backwards because the penalty shootout is freshest in our mind. To me, I mean, obviously, as an England fan watching a penalty shootout, you don't think we're going to win. And with every penalty, Jordan Pickford looked more and more like a micro machine. You know, he appeared...
He's a little geezer, isn't he?
Yeah, he appeared to be getting smaller and smaller. And that save he made was incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. Like, I'm shaking still. Like,
No, it's okay. And we know you didn't watch any of this anyway. You were just looking at your hands.
Yeah, my hands look fucking great. Pickford for the save for the final one, to dive, like, full length, and to see that you're not quite getting the trajectory of it quite right, and to just shoot up a hand to save it, and then for that hand to be strong enough at that point in the game to actually keep that out is, like, phenomenal. And fair play to him at the end. Like, he fronted it out, and he was like, I know everyone thinks I'm little, but I'm strong and I'm agile. And he was like, and that's enough, isn't it? And to be fair to him, it is enough.
Well, I mean, that's sort of a direct response to Courtois, wasn't it? Saying he's not tall enough. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we could still meet them in the World Cup final. So nice to say that. Barry, how much credit do we give Eric Dier for what was not necessarily our best penalty, England's best penalty, just to keep your nerve at that moment? You cannot imagine the emotional pressure there.
I think he deserves a lot of credit because if he'd missed that and England had failed to win, he was already well on his way to being scapegoated for this any defeat that might have come from this game. On social media, he was the guy who everyone was pointing the big finger of blame at. And so if he missed a penalty and England had gone out, it would have been even worse.
They pointed the finger of blame because he missed that header, or because he came on in a defensive role and didn't have a particularly great game?
He came on in a defensive role. He could be considered slightly culpable for, you know, selling Kyle Walker short with a pass from which Colombia launched a great counter-attack. Yeah, I wouldn't say he had a great half hour or whatever he was on for, but it was a 40 minute or so. But, you know, just looking at social media, he was well on his way to... There's always a scapegoat when England go out of a tournament.
It felt a bit just like he just kind of slowed things down. Maybe it was just sort of like we were saying, you understand why they bring him on, like, with 10 minutes to go when you're 1-0 down. But it's just all of a sudden it sort of invited them on a little bit. So it went from, oh, well, we've kind of got you, so don't worry about it, to, oh, little bit scared now.
Yeah, I was thinking about the shootout when he said slow things down, because this game obviously ends up being all about the shootout, and it isn't just a chance that England took good penalties in the shootout, and that's worth saying. First of all, I think it's really quite poetic that Gareth Southgate, who was in a line thereof, I guess, because we've had in England a good number of sort of symbolic penalty misses, but Southgate, who missed the big one in 96 and was the scapegoat that year, has been in charge of this team and has been part of, and not isolated, it's not just doing it on his own, but sort of almost a systemic attempt to take this on. You know, one of the things that was interesting that came out in the days before this game about the FA's technical director, Dan Ashworth, had commissioned a study into England's all of England's penalty shootouts, major tournaments, trying to sort of find common threads, kind of find things that went wrong. And he found out that England players took less time over their kicks than any other country did. And so that idea of slowing things down extends even into the shootout. And I thought that was noticeable, actually. I thought there was a much sort of slower walk up, and much more. I think it also helps psychologically, frankly, to have someone like Harry Kane taking the first one, because he has taken four penalties now in this tournament. They've all been bloody brilliant.
Mm. I mean, to be fair, Harry Kane couldn't walk. He barely moved in the whole of extra time, did he?
which is a concern, because he's in any sort of trouble for the next game, then England are missing the one player on the pitch who seems capable of scoring a goal during open play, really. But,
or not during open play. It was a penalty, and it's interesting, Barry, isn't it? Because not just Colombia, but when will defenders learn that you can't basically ride another player and not have a foul given against you, either with the referee seeing it straight away or with VAR? This was a straight decision from the ref, and it was such an obvious penalty. It was such a silly thing to do, as Paolo says, because Colombia actually defended well in this game.
Well, it is silly, but you can do it and get away with it. Other players have got away with it. Other players have got away with doing it to Harry Kane. This guy didn't. And yeah, it's a silly thing to do. Why not just try and win the ball instead? Just his very presence in the penalty area seems to instill total panic, and I don't really understand why. But Colombia were an ill-disciplined rabble, and I thought one or two of them should have been sent off. Carlos Sanchez, who was sent off in the first game for that deliberate handball, I thought he should have gone.
Yeah, gave the penalty
away. After the penalty.
Yeah.
I thought Radamel Falcao was quite lucky to stay on the pitch, because he was more an assistant to the referee or an advisor than anyone in a video control room. He was just constantly at the ref. And the thing is, they did themselves no favours, because when they actually tried to play a bit, they were good, and at times they had England on the ropes, but for the first 70 minutes, they were a disgrace.
Did you mention Barrios in there as well with his little headbutt?
Yeah, of course.
Felt like it was going to be the big talking point of the game at a certain point.
Yeah, he should have gone as well. So they didn't seem very bright, put it that way.
Do you think that was a genuine tactic from their manager? Because as someone who's obviously totally biased, so when Harry Maguire dived and then got up very quickly, I thought that was fine. When Jordan Henderson went down from the Barrios headbutt,
not only was Harry Maguire going down and getting up quite quickly fine, apparently if you dive and get up and then say, "Ooh, I'm sorry for diving," you should be commended for your sportsmanship, according to punditry's Glenn Hoddle.
Sure. But my point being, as an England fan, I watched that and thought Colombia were the filthiest, nastiest, dirtiest, evilest team I've seen this World Cup. But I am brutally aware that from the scuffing up the penalty spot, which was just so blatant.
It was very funny, though. It was very funny.
You're right, Sam. It was funny.
We can laugh at it now because he scored it. If he hadn't have scored it, I'd be spending emptying my accounts, going straight to Bogota right now, just waiting for more coming back.
Yeah, but you sort of think it was.
There might be other people waiting for him.
There might be,
but it was sort of unbearable. It was sort of unbearable to the point where you wonder where VAR will go, and will it go to things like bad sportsmanship, because that whole melee, I mean, the ref's got to be stronger there. The penalty, it took 3.5 minutes or maybe longer.
I think between 3 minutes.
Between the penalty
being
given.
That was the ref's fault. You know, he lost control. Mark Geiger, American. He should have sent someone off.
Yeah. But as an objective viewer, Colombia were complete shit houses. Is that fair?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think it is fair. And like I say, they didn't do themselves any favours, because they can play. They're not bad when they put their minds to it.
Well, I think it's worth adding on that I actually, again, credit to Southgate, I thought that England dealt with that quite well. I thought England didn't rise to it nearly as much as they could have done, and another version of England might have done.
Wouldn't necessarily agree, to be honest. I thought
they definitely seemed rattled at one point, even if they didn't sort of like actually get into the actual pushing and shoving of it. They definitely got under their skin to a point where...
Well, they did get into the pushing and shoving.
No, a little bit. And Henderson got booked for sort of like just sprinting straight up and just screaming for no reason, like a child.
Can we give Southgate credit for the second half of extra time where England looked... In the first half of extra time, England looked beaten, didn't they?
Yeah.
I was devastated. And actually, you can understand why, because of that 93rd minute equaliser. But in the second half of extra time, they look more positive.
Oh, yeah. I thought they might win it before it got to penalties. It was weird, actually, because they were totally in control of the game for the first half. And then Colombia sort of took over in the second. And it had crossed my mind early in the first half that England were kind of running around a bit like headless chickens, and it might cost them in the end. Then sort of, they brought on Eric Dier and just became very meek, I thought, and were in, you know, conceded the equaliser, and it looked like they might lose it in the first half of extra time. So yeah, the game ebbed and flowed, but there's no doubt the better team won.
Colombia had 14 shots, England 16. Colombia had 4 on target, England 2. That's the first time England have conceded in second half stoppage time in a World Cup match. And that's the first time England have won a penalty shootout at the World Cup. It's interesting in the referee, Faustino Asprilla sent a tweet on 88, near the end of the game, saying, very hard to win with a referee playing for the Queen of England. So, I mean, it does show you that there will be a Colombian narrative that we are not having, Paolo. I don't know how, but...
Yeah, I don't... unfortunately, I suppose, I don't know a ton of people I'm following on Twitter from Colombia, but I know that I saw a few people who do saying that their feed was a very mixed place right now. Again, I think there are some things that England, you know, again, you were already mentioning Maguire and Henderson, I think rightly was sure to highlight that little nudge from Barrios. I'm sure, though, yes, that football fans in every part of the world will always choose to see what they want to see. And Tino's Twitter account is very often a delight, a chaotic delight, and a delight nonetheless.
Who would you pick out as the players who played best tonight? If you watched any of it.
From England? Honestly, mate, I feel like I was blacking out at one point. From us, like, I felt like there was a couple of good performances. I was actually really impressed with Harry Maguire. Won a lot of important headers, and I can't remember who said it. Someone said it on Twitter when he gets the ball at his feet and he starts ambling forward, he looks a little bit like one of those Hollyoaks actors that have turned up for Soccer Aid or something like that, and he just sort of doesn't really know what to do. But he won a lot of important challenges. I was really impressed. But like, Harry Kane was by far our most important and effective player going forward. Also, just like defensively, like he got people out of trouble so many times by people just like aimlessly firing the ball at him and him holding off. At some points, it was like 4 players and winning really important tackles. I was a bit disappointed in Dele Alli, but I think that might be just because of him getting a bit back up to speed, didn't really look fit. But yeah, I don't know, like Trippier played pretty well. I think it was kind of a mixed bag, really. I feel like we did like just enough.
In terms of players, I think Trippier stood out. I've already mentioned Kane because I know it's only penalties, and everyone is so quick to flip and denigrate goals scored at World Cups. Are there any penalties? Are there any against bad teams? Go and look through the Golden Boot scorers every year that there's been a World Cup. A lot of them pop. Was it Salenko? I think it was Salenko who got a joint one the Golden Boot with 5 goals in a single game. You know, like there's lots of Golden Boot winners who get there without being the sort of most glamorous goals every time. But honestly, for me, it still comes back to Southgate is the number one here. I think this game was about Gareth Southgate. I think the shootout was about Gareth Southgate. I think even the penalty that was won in regular time, if you remember, they'd done that sort of all 4 England players lined up in a row. Mm. I think Kane, if you watch closely what happens with him and Sanchez, it's not the reason it's a foul. It's a foul because Sanchez is an idiot with what he does next. But Kane gives him a little nudge and puts him off balance right as they take their first step. I think it's a big win for Southgate this game.
You mentioned those 4 players in a row. If you were watching in the UK, it was Glenn Hoddle was summarising and called it the love train. Phil says, can Hoddle stop calling it the love train? I prefer the England centipede. Oh, God. Matt says, are you a fan of the love train? And if so, what other set pieces would you give similar Motown-themed names to? That's quite a difficult one to throw at you. I've only got...
I've just answered the question. On the spot, Motown reference set pieces.
I've only got Under the Boardwalk and Tears of a Clown in my head, and none of them go, that's one for you below the line. Stephen says, am I the only football fan, English person, who doesn't want England to win? I just couldn't stand the knighthoods and the bus tours and all that.
Yeah, no, he's on his own. Because like, it'd be great. Imagine how good it would be. Everyone would be pissed for like 3 days solid.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the only reason it would be great.
There'd be a lot of things that'd be good.
This is the youth hipster take of why it would be good.
I could tell you why it'd be awful.
Tell us, Barry.
Well, you're going to have Michael Gove and Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage hijacking it for their own political ends.
True. Yeah.
Saying, if we can do this, we can plough our own furrow outside
of Europe.
Yeah,
but it's coming home. Can we
you're going to have the Sun and the Daily Mail tub-thumping with their jingoistic propaganda and filth. Do you want how many years of that are you prepared to put up with, Max, before you think, oh, God, you know, maybe this wasn't such a good thing?
It would be better off if Kieran Trippier had put that penalty wide.
Face every day for... Oh, God.
You've ruined the World Cup for me now.
Yeah, sorry. But, you know, these are the things. Yeah, I wouldn't begrudge it to the players or quite a lot of the fans. All those numpty morons who sing about German bombers, they'll be in their element. Do you want to see them happy?
You know. Josh says, but think of the... How many tattoo artists would get more work? That would stimulate the economy.
It would.
Yeah, there is that.
Josh says, have Colombia had more yellow cards than Barry's had Nando's this World Cup?
I have no idea how many Colombian... I would imagine so, yes. But
6 yellow cards for Colombia, Nando's for Barry?
Probably about the same.
So it's a draw currently. And, you know, you've got every chance of winning that tournament because Colombia are now out.
I think, I mean, it doesn't matter a jot. But one thing that has, I think you've overlooked because you're a lot more invested in this game than I was, but it was an awful game. It really was terrible.
I'll take that now.
Oh, no, absolutely. It's an irrelevant thing to say, I mean, but it was dreadful.
I remember at one point when I just had my head in my hands, I was just like, this is really painful to watch. And you're like, yeah, it is. This is so bad.
I'd just like to say, when Jeremina equalised, I mentioned it, you laughed at me.
It was a giggle.
It didn't feel like what a friend would do, Barry. That's what I'd like to say.
I wasn't laughing at you.
Okay.
Specifically. Don't make it everything about you.
No. Okay.
I was just laughing at the... Because it was funny.
Here's a question from Christopher, who says, who do you think Sweden will fancy in the semi-final, Russia or Croatia? And we will get onto that in part two, where we analyse in probably less detail... Potentially an even worse football match, but that's up for debate. Okay. A slightly better football match between Sweden and Switzerland. Welcome to part two of the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. England are going to win the World Cup. Anyway, Sweden 1, Switzerland 0. Barry, this was better than the England game. I mean, it's hard to tell. It was a pretty lousy game of football, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I thought it was better. I was entertained by both, but in different ways. And this Sweden-Switzerland game has got a very bad rap, but I didn't think it was terrible. Some of the football was awful. Some of the finishing from both sides was beyond comical. But that in its own way was kind of entertaining. I think the fact that people were expecting so little from this, like I thought it would be terrible. 2 counter-attacking teams sitting back and with just a football sitting in the middle of the pitch and no one going near it. And it didn't really pan out that way. They both kind of attacked each other, but they were so toothless in the final third, each of them. And eventually... Sweden got the winner courtesy of a deflected goal, and it was another bad shot straight at the keeper, which was deflected by Manuel Akanji, Emil Forsberg's shot. He stuck a foot out and just sent it. You know, the keeper was hopelessly wrong-footed. But, yeah, it wasn't a good game, but it wasn't as bad as I think you think it was.
It looked to me as if these two teams... aren't particularly good at football, Paolo.
So there was a line on Twitter, which I'm going to steal from the US sports writer Charles, I don't know if it's Boehm or Boehm, but because I just think it was the most apt description that I've seen of Sweden in this game and in some other games, not all of them, but that he described them as the walking manifestation of that sinking feeling that it's just not going to be your day. And I think that when Italy were playing against them, it was two legs of feeling like that. You know, they never quite sort of make you ooh and ah, and yet they make you feel like somehow, especially once they've got on top of you, there's no way back. It's just not going to happen for you. And of course, look, Switzerland, the reason it might not have been their day may have come down to the fact that in the end, Switzerland manifestly lacking a quality striker and have been for a long time. They've actually really punched above their weight under Petkovic, but they lack a quality striker. So is Sweden, but I think at some point we have to take a step back and say, oh, you know, Sweden don't look impressed. Sweden aren't thrilling anyone. But they have now eliminated Italy. They've eliminated Holland before that in qualifying. They thumped Mexico, a good Mexico team who we've all said good things about, 3-0. And they knocked out Germany in that group as well. All right, they lost their game to them with a ridiculously good last-minute goal. But they still finished top of that group. Sweden are manifestly capable of mixing it with anyone. They have mixed it and come out on the right side of now several very good games. Very good, opponents, I guess. Games against good opponents.
But it's the easy side of the draw, Paolo.
They can defend very well. Yeah. They're very good in defence. That their captain, Granqvist, whose wife was due to give birth today, actually.
And I'm a big fan because he looks about 48, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Very good at penalties.
He was
as well.
Immense. He's a rock in defence. God, you know, they had some great chances. They could have been 2 or 3 up by half time, I think. There should have been 3 or 4 goals in the first half. But the finishing is desperate.
There was a really fun one. After Berg was put through it, he absolutely panicked and launched it into row Z. The fullback had a volley, didn't he, where he just trundled it off for a throw.
Yeah, well, side footed it out over the line. It was the midfielder, Albin Ekdal. He missed a couple, the pick of which was beautiful cross. He's alone in splendid isolation at the far post and decides, instead of heading it as any normal human being ought to do, he would go for the side foot and just walloped it over the bar.
Wellied
it over the bar.
Update
and
from
Sonner was forced into a good save by Forsberg.
Yeah,
as well. So
actually, Forsberg, of all the players to score, he was sort of the least boring of the players on the pitch, I thought. Producer Jonathan updates on Granqvist's wife. He's emailed Olof Lund from TV4. She's not given birth just yet, but she may have given birth by the time you listen to this pod.
So, Max, if you were on international duty and yes, the future Mrs. Rushton was expecting due date, would you attend to your international duties or your husbandly duties?
It's a great question.
It is. I'd like to hear the answer.
Is it my first baby? Is it my first major championships?
Both.
Okay. How old am I?
You're the same age as Granqvist, 37.
37.
Is he? Okay, 37.
He looks 37, doesn't
mid-30s. He? Mid-30s.
I'm mid-30s, and it's my first major championship.
Probably your last as well.
Okay, it sounds like. And what round are we in? He's 33, apparently. But anyway, I'm 33. It's still my last major championship. What stage of the competition are we in?
First knockout.
And what's the competition for places like in the squad?
No, you're a first team staple. You're captain. You take the penalties and you're good at them.
And it's my first baby?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, on the basis that the future Mrs. Rushton has never listened to this podcast. And if she did, she'd never get this far in.
On the basis that I have her, she's on my WhatsApp contacts list.
Oh, I'd stay for the football.
Would you?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I think I would. I'll have another baby.
Not with her, you won't.
This is Granqvist's second child, producer Jonathan says.
Ah, so that's fine.
He doesn't have anything to worry about. Sam, watching Sweden today and watching England today, how much do you fear Sweden, or are you booking the bar for the semi-final already?
I'm not booking out nothing, but like it's just one of those where I think what Paolo was saying, they're no mugs. Like, they're a good team. There's no weak teams in this because everyone has beaten someone good. And I think that we showed today that we probably beat one of the better teams that are left in it in Colombia. There's certainly one that's like quite hard to beat. And Sweden just feel like they're quite hard to score against. Like, the fact that we didn't really look like scoring at all today, apart from a penalty, does not fill me with confidence. But that being said, it's obviously coming home. So, like, yeah, fine.
I don't think England have anything to fear from Sweden.
No, but
they may well mess it up.
But that's what I mean. It's just one of those things where if Sweden just decide to just not let us score, we just won't score and we'll have to go for this all over again.
And arguably, Sweden don't have... I want them to have stuff to... They probably have more to fear from England, but they don't have that much more to fear, do they? They'll watch that game.
It's the easy side of the draw.
Paolo, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think England would be naive, and I don't think they will be naive enough to go around imagining, like lots of fans might imagine, that this is a team to be taken lightly. I think that, you know, everything that's obvious about them is true. They don't concede goals very easily. I think, you know, what was interesting actually was Olof, who was on last night. He was sort of talking about the consciousness of this is it. If you mess up now, that's it. Your tournament's over. And I actually feel like some of the last 16 games of this tournament, delightfully, have been played almost completely absent that idea. You think about the France-Argentina game. Perhaps even to an extent the second half of that Belgium-Japan game. I remember looking at the Japan players at the end of it, and it looked like the realisation was only just hitting them that this was it, that was over. Whereas I feel like today we've had two games with teams very conscious that if they lose, that's it. It's all over. And you've had two games like that. On what we've seen today, I can't imagine it's going to be a hugely sort of edge-of-your-seat end-to-end game, but it's going to be a very thoughtful, tactical game.
It's going to be absolutely miserable to watch.
Well, it's 3 o'clock on
a Saturday. I can't imagine you two, and I'm pointing at Sam and Max, being any more miserable than you were watching the Colombia game.
It's a 3 p.m. kickoff on Saturday, unless obviously it gets moved for TV. What's
Well, I was going to ask, look, if England had lost that shootout, they would, after all their guff about, you know, oh, we're so likeable and we play darts with journalists, even though we probably don't really want to, but you know, it just keeps them happy. Pat them on the head, call them by their first name, and they go off, you know, feeling 10 foot tall. But so after all that, and the, you know, oh, we've worked on penalties. If England had lost that shootout, they would be an international laughingstock again. But they didn't lose; they won. Have they now, in your opinion, done enough so that even if they do lose against Sweden, to come home without having failed?
Do you know what? It's the wrong time to ask me that question, because I'm just so giddy and exhausted and happy for those players. Yeah. And I do agree with Paolo.
I just think, has this win and winning a penalty shootout taken a lot of pressure off, do you think?
Maybe. I mean, I just agree with Paolo that I do still agree that Gareth Southgate seems to have done something different with this set of players than as an England fan I've ever felt before. And I don't know if I'm just buying into the superficial nonsense about playing, going 10 pin bowling, you know, with Rory Smith and Henry Winter. I mean, I just don't, but I feel a connection that I haven't before. And I don't know if that's just because I keep being told I should feel a connection, or that I actually genuinely do, or that they've just got the right social media managers, or they've just worked it
sensibly. Tom Jenkins said to me, do you remember I was saying I did a talk with Tom Jenkins, the Guardian photographer, a few days ago, and he said he thinks a lot of this goodwill England have generated is down to the fact that, down to photography, they have a photographer embedded in the camp and, you know, taking the pictures of the guys floating around on inflatable unicorns and trying on their suits and, you know, behind the scenes. Beforehand, the FA would never have put those photos out to the public, but now they are. And it just, again, it adds to this bullshit likability narrative, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure the England squad now, you know, like any England squad before, there's people who are likable and people who really aren't.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And I was interviewing Paul Ince about this the other day, and he was saying exactly the same about 98, and there were great people in that squad. You know, Merce, obviously, who I know really well, is literally the most likable human you've ever seen. Barney's written about, you know, Michael Owen scoring that goal and crossing to the bench, and Merce is just there going, what a goal! You know, like, the totally lovable guy. So maybe you're right. Maybe I'm just buying in to what I'm being sold. Like, maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid.
That's what they want. You know, that's that. It's the plan, and the plan is obviously working.
Sweden have 3 out of 4 clean sheets so far. and did finish top of a group with Germany and Mexico. Sean Williams says Andreas Granqvist comes from a town called Parp, which is funny.
It is funny.
And Paul, Paul, thanks, Paolo.
I just really enjoyed your. It's yeah. funny underneath yeah. that. That was yeah. perfect.
That's a good one for the people who like Paolo's laugh, and a really bad one for that guy who really doesn't like your laugh, who doesn't listen to the pod when you're on because of your laugh. Yeah. Paul Danahar says he was at the game. He says there are a lot of German fans in the St. Petersburg Stadium to watch Sweden Switzerland. One of them told me he skipped the group round and bought for the knockout stages, assuming, not unreasonably, that his team would stroll through. That'll do for part two. In part three, we will look ahead to the quarterfinals, which begin on Friday. Welcome to part three of the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. England is still in the World Cup, yes. Let's look at the other three quarterfinals. So Sweden-England is 3 p.m. on Saturday. Before that on Friday, Uruguay-France is the afternoon kickoff at 3 as well. Paolo, this should be an interesting game, shouldn't it? Because France showed how expansive they can be against Argentina. Uruguay are very good defensively.
Yeah, I suppose other than the England game, just because, being half English and living in England, I think this is the game I'm looking forward to most. I think that it's been fascinating listening to Philippe here on the podcast saying that even after this point in the tournament, he looks at France and even he doesn't feel like he really understands how they're trying to play. They have allowed themselves to be drawn into a sort of ridiculous wide open game in the last round. I know Matuidi's out for this one, which reintroduces the suggestion of will Deschamps go back to Dembele in the line behind the attack, but the shape is just all over the place. But really talented individuals against the Uruguay team, who in my opinion have played sort of some of the most tactically disciplined, effective team football of any side in the tournament. I think Tabarez is doing a fantastic job as manager there. I think that's unsurprising given he's the longest serving manager in club football, I think, ever. Oh, sorry, international football, I think, ever. And he's someone who has sort of not just led the team where it is, but obviously had a huge influence at the whole structure of how they do things from the youth teams up. Everyone buys into what he's doing, the players do, and he's actually tweaked the team subtly over the tournament. I already talked, I think, on the last time I was on about the introduction of Diego Laxalt at fullback and how that's made the team more attacking. I'll be really fascinated to see if he sticks with that against France. Does he dare to keep sort of playing in a more open way like we saw against Portugal? But I think Uruguay are really good. I think they're the team hit this tournament again who are the most good team rather than just, say, Brazil, where I look at and think, wow, this is an incredible collection of players who can do incredible things. I think Uruguay are a real... real unit, and I'm excited to see how they do against France.
An issue is Cavani and his fitness. He looks unlikely to be fully fit. Sam, how do you see this going?
I think it's an interesting one because what Paolo was saying about them being a great unit, and I think they are. I mean, they don't let teams attack them very easily. And instead of, I can't remember who said it, but they're two centre defenders. Don't so much mark players out of games as just sort of like calmly escort them off the pitch.
Well, it's Atletico Madrid starting centre back pairing.
Yeah,
why wouldn't that work?
They're good. Like, they're a really good team, and if Suarez can actually like put it together, then they've got the makings of a team that's really dangerous as well. But I think it also comes back to something that we said previously about like a lot of teams sort of like approaching these knockout stages feeling without that pressure that it is their last chance. Like, France has a very young team, and in that game, in their last game that they played, it felt to me like it was a wide open one with lots of players sort of, you don't want to use the cliche of playing without fear, but Mbappe was not scared of anything. Mm. And that didn't really feel, you didn't really get that across in the group stages. Now it just sort of feels like they've kind of taken a bit of a step back and they're just really playing and knowing that, I mean, if it doesn't work out, I mean, fine. Yeah, they've got no shape and they're a mess and no one really knows how they're going to line up or who knows how they'll turn out. But I think they're a really fun team to watch. Even Brazil, who should be the most fun team to watch. France, for me, are always the most fun just because the sheer sort of like possibility of them imploding constantly is always interesting. And just the chance to see Mbappe play again, if he's anything like he was in the last game, like, I'm really looking forward to that.
Barry?
I can't call this. I kind of want Uruguay to win because I'd like there to be a South American team in the final, and obviously that would boost the chances. I think they're capable of winning, but and like Sam says, France are capable of anything, you know, good or bad. So, yeah, it's just really hard to call. You know, most games in this World Cup I've had an opinion on, you know, how it'll go. Sometimes I've been wrong. I think a lot of people have got certain games completely wrong. But this one and Sweden-Switzerland earlier today, I just can't come down firmly on either side with any confidence. I just hope it's one of the great quarterfinals, and I think it might be.
Do you have any more confidence in predicting Brazil-Belgium, which on paper is incredibly exciting football match?
Yeah. I think Brazil would be too good for them.
Yeah, and you were saying that too, Paolo, weren't you? You got a feeling Brazil might walk away with it.
Yeah, I mean, I call this sort of an impression rather than a studied tactical analysis, which give us a couple more days for that, I guess, even this is only just finished the last round. But I just have this feeling that if Japan can do what they did to Belgium, then a team with as much attacking potential as Brazil could really rip them to shreds. But, you know, very probably Belgium are going to approach this game very differently to how the Japan game. I think they're probably guilty of being quite arrogant against Japan, which you can't imagine they will be against Brazil, so perhaps it won't work out that way.
Sam, Russia play Croatia. At what point will Russia do what they should have done in the group stages and disappear like we all thought they would? Or,
well, it depends how long their strict diet of training and rest goes on for.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you are not the first to make a comment potentially about how
rested they are.
Yeah, about how rested they are. And you know when they also, there was a VAR for Spain where Piqué and Ramos were taken down, which wasn't given. That really Russia can't win in this tournament, because if they get anywhere, everyone will just say, I wonder what they're eating and drinking, and it's all in their favour. Do we give them any hope, Barry, against Croatia? And we have to.
I would if Croatia play like they did in the last game.
Yeah.
Certainly.
I think Russia just haven't got enough about them. And Croatia have options, like they can turn it on, whereas I just can't see the best Russia can hope for again is just sort of just to grind it out, whereas Croatia can grind it out or just rip them to pieces. Do you know what I mean? It could be one of those things where pressure and expectation can take a team so far until it gets to the point that they sort of like actually reach critical mass and they're just like, oh yeah, no, we've gone quite enough now.
But that's kind of when the rest and nutrition comes in.
Yeah, that's a good point about the rest and nutrition. That does come into play around this sort of time. Well, I guess we'll have to see. Maybe they'll. There was something on Twitter about the use of short sleeve shirts that I don't know if you saw. I think.
Well, I don't trust goalkeepers in short sleeve shirts. That's why Ospina didn't save those penalties. People have mentioned goalkeepers who have short sleeves.
Oh, it's fun. Remember the Iceland goalkeeper? He looked mad.
Well, there's Buffon, Casillas, there's Schmeichel the other day. There's basically every good keeper that's ever been in that. So anyway, look, they're the quarterfinals. They're on Friday and Saturday. Fascinating story, Paolo, about John Obi Mikel, isn't it? That played against Argentina for Nigeria just 4 hours after his father had been kidnapped. The kidnappers demanded 10 million Nigerian Naira, I hope I pronounced that correctly, which is about £21,000. He didn't tell the Nigerian Football Federation. He didn't tell his manager. His quotes are, I was confused. I didn't know what to do. In the end, I knew I could not let 180 Nigerians down. I had to shut it out of my head. I mean, we talk about the pressure on Eric Dier taking a penalty. Mm. I mean, this is, I mean, it's almost doesn't sound real, Paolo, does it?
No, and it's especially sort of, I mean, it's almost too awful to even talk about the football affiliated to it. Like, I can't imagine how I would react if I was told before what, and I know we like to romanticise it because it's a game we all love, but what is ultimately going to work and being told, oh, a member of your family has been kidnapped, how would you carry on doing your work? Like, I don't know how you do that. And I want to stress as well that I also don't want to be like judgmental of him, because I'm saying I don't know. I'm not saying
I wouldn't, or anything like that.
Like I
agree.
I don't know how you react in that situation, and I sort of feel doubly devastated for him, because I feel like, you know, this is me from over here not knowing him personally, that his reaction has been, well, I still need to do my duty for my country. And unfortunately, Nigeria have come up short in a game where they really, I think a lot of people felt they deserved to get through that group more than Argentina did. Mm. Even though Argentina contributed us a very entertaining last 16 game, Nigeria probably played better with them than Argentina had through the tournament as a whole to that point. Yeah, it's just a horrible situation. And
has his dad been released?
Yeah,
yeah.
So dad's been released. He's in hospital with injuries. Mm. The shocking end sentence to this report is that it's the second time his father has been kidnapped, following a previous incident in 2011 when he was released after 10 days. So yeah, you're right, Paolo. Puts it all into perspective, doesn't it? Would you like, Sam, some left-footed footballer transfer news?
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, I'll go with the big one first. Paul Konchesky has joined East Thurrock United.
Good on team. A
dual player and assistant first team coach role. He's 37, was most recently at Billericay. And Riyad Mahrez, Leicester to Man City. Apparently accepted a fee of £60 million.
Good player.
You know, and you sort of feel Man City need some more attacking.
Yeah, I don't really know where he fits in there, apart from just sort of more of the same, which is just very, very talented, like, attacking players.
Mm.
What does he add?
Yeah, I agree with that. So I was thinking that, going, he doesn't make their first team better, or does he? I mean, you wouldn't. Would you drop Sane? I mean, would you drop Sterling or
poor old Sane?
Yeah, you're right, but you wouldn't drop Sane. I wouldn't drop Sane. No, maybe I would.
He was fantastic end of last season.
Mm. Yeah, didn't get picked for the World Cup, and now he's been dropped by Manchester City. I don't know. You have to change the team. You have to bring in different players. Mm. You just have to. It has to evolve. So I don't know how he'll fit in, how many games he'll start, how many. But you just need new faces around the training ground. You need new blood in the squad, because if you don't, things stagnate. And
maybe if they're thinking of Raheem through the middle, or if it's going to be David Silva probably coming to around about the end now, maybe there'll be a bit of regeneration that way. But, like, I agree with what Barry says, but, like, if you're Mahrez, just go somewhere where you're going to be the main man. Like, Not saying go somewhere like Leicester at that sort of level, but he can pretty much pick and choose wherever he goes. And I get it. You want to go to the team who are probably one of the two, three best in the world. But, I mean, I don't know if I could do it. Like, because the inherent ego that must be in the player like that, to then just kind of go, well, I don't know, we'll fit you in somewhere.
Carabao Cup. The Carabao Cup box for Riyad Mahrez.
Well, look, it could be just a money thing.
Yeah.
Or he may just have so much self-belief, he goes, I'll walk into that team and someone else will have to make way. It could be a combination of both.
Yeah, you're right. Rick says, on the subject of chicken on buses, which was yesterday, and my very poorly told anecdote about Gilberto Silva, he said, I once shared an overnight bus trip in Bolivia with crates of baby chickens. Although we had seats, they were consigned to the luggage shelves above us. A lot of people tweeted me to ask if there was a pecking order to... Thank you very much. On the subject of the Nice 11, Jordan Jarrett Bryan, Channel 4 sports reporter, said, why wasn't Okazaki in the Nice Guy 11? Good point. Miles says, surely through a combination of his Sierra Leone charity work and golf club antics, Craig Bellamy would make both the Nice Guy and the Shithouse 11s.
It could be like the magic man between the two.
Oh, yeah, he has a bib on.
Yeah, he's the only man with a bib.
Dermot says, can I request Barry recite Spandau Ballet's Gold after England get knocked out on penalties tonight? No, you can't. Ridian says, is my wife right that I listen to and am more interested in Barry more often than her these days?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how much he listens to his wife.
Ebo says, will we finally get my humps from Baz today?
Nope.
And Bristol Ed, to finish, says, if England go through, surely Barry has to read Hole Again by Atomic Kitten. And at the end of the tournament, are we going to hear him read Rudyard Kipling's If, like Des Lynam in 98? Would please Max's dad too, Poetry for the Masses. Absolutely right. When my dad sat me down to give me some career advice to say, why don't you introduce poetry to Classic FM? And I had to tell him I wasn't on Classic FM. So anyway, look, I'll leave it up to you, Barry. Here are the lyrics for Hole Again. England are in the World Cup quarterfinals. It's coming home. Sam, thank you so much for your time.
No problem.
It was nice to celebrate with you.
It was.
I've never heard anyone celebrate more with the C word. I'll say that for sure.
It's a lot of that, sorry.
That's okay. You're young.
I am. I can get away with it.
Yeah. Paolo.
Cheers.
Thank you.
If you see me walking down the street, staring at the sky and dragging my 2 feet, you just pass me by. It still makes me cry, but you can make me whole again. And if you see me with another man laughing and joking, doing what I can, I won't put you down, because I want you round. You can make me whole again. Looking back on when we first met, I cannot escape and I cannot forget. Baby, you're the one. You still turn me on. You can make me whole again. Time is laying heavy on my heart. Seems I've got too much of it since we've been apart. My friends make me smile, if only for a while. You can make me whole again. Looking back on when we first met, I cannot escape and I cannot forget. Baby, you're the one. You still turn me on. You can make me whole again. For now I'll have to wait. But baby, if you change your mind, don't be too late. 'Cause I just can't go on. It's already been too long. But you can make me whole again.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.